The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And downtown Atlanta, day two of the SEC Media Days. Not too many fireworks, but the day is young, and we may change that narrative here in just a couple of minutes as we say hello to you from Atlanta. It started early today. We had Vanderbilt and, of course, Alabama. You just heard from Shane Beamer, and we are delighted to welcome one of our all-time favorite guests, a guy I used to do radio with, and we had a blast. I'm talking about Mike Leach, the head coach at Mississippi State. You miss doing that? You were really good.
Yeah, I do kind of. It was awesome. And then, you know, I was in great shape because during the breaks I'd do prison exercises like push-ups and sit-ups. Of course, the producers hated that.
They did.
Came back out of breath. You can't do it. Well, I'd do it anyway. And then, it was awesome. And then, hanging out on my lawn chair and talking to the radio.
Yeah, that was my biggest disappointment. I never got to come down. I mean, I've been there, but never got to come down and hang out with you and the Keys. That would have been a bucket list.
Oh, you should have done that. And then, and of course, your listeners would have hated that because it wouldn't have had a lot to do with Auburn and Alabama. But nevertheless, we would have had a good time.
I caught a little bit of your opening today, and I just get the impression, and I would never want to put words in your mouth but you seem like you're looking for something else when you come here than a lot of boilerplate pablum. What do you look forward to, and what do you hope to accomplish other than the fact that you're told to be here?
Well, I would put quite a large emphasis on that told to be here part. people ask questions, and of course the opportunity to share college football, and I think college football would not be near as much fun without the personalities of the teams, the players, sure, the coaches, and all that. So I think you just try to answer stuff in a genuine fashion, and then there's less to keep track of, and yeah, I don't know. I'm not looking for anything. I'm more of a counterpuncher than I don't come here with a specific message I hope to deliver.
But when you were doing this from a media standpoint, as all media people, you're looking for a compelling storyline, and it just seemed to me, and I had a coach tell me this yesterday, that the first time he came here, he was just trying not to screw up. And it's almost, I don't know if the PR people, but it just seems like it's drilled into coaches' heads. Don't say anything that goes viral.
Well, there's a little bit of don't screw up because, we're kind of in an era of ambush, Nobody knows that better than you. You've had to think about that a lot. There's a lot of folks out there trying to ambush and cancel somebody, which, of course, that's absurd. I mean, you want to make everybody as boring as possible, go ahead and start canceling everybody. I think you got to avoid that. But then I think there's also a point to where you have to react against it by, being willing to express yourself and being willing to be wrong and being willing to live with the fact that somebody else might get upset, because I do think they have a responsibility to not whine about everything all the time,
But today we heard from Nick Saban, we've heard from other coaches on this NIL issue, and everyone complains and everyone says what we need to do, but nobody seems to be doing anything.
Oh, I know. We're going to have to solve that ourselves, in my opinion. College and conferences and things. We need to solve that ourselves. I've never bought the notion that Congress is going to be very helpful. First of all, we know more about the problem than they do. Second of all, we know more how we got there than they do. Third of all, just for fun, because you like fun questions on your show, tell me three things Congress has accomplished in the last 5 years.
Well, the thing they mainly do in times of crisis.
That's not an accomplishment.
No, I can't answer the question. And I was just there the other day at the Senate, and they are simply used for emergency funds. And that's not an accomplishment, but it's a reaction.
Right.
They don't do anything proactively.
Which brings us right back to college football needs to be solved by college football. And then, you know, thinking about it for 3 days, I mean, I came up with a solution, which I think really needs to be polished and all that probably. But, you know, I mean, it starts with defining, you know, what is a professional college football player and what is an amateur football player. And I think there's space for both. And I think that, you know, the notion of that we're not even going to define this thing and all of a sudden, you know, a 17, 18-year-old athlete now has more professional privileges than any professionals in the history of the world. Well, that, of course, is absurd. And, you know, there's a point where I think, you know, everybody gets in a room and it's kind of like being married to your sister. Pretty soon everybody comes out the same. And, well, that's impossible. Well, how in the world is it impossible, you know? I mean, it wasn't impossible. We got ourselves in this mess to begin with. But I think once we define what it is, I think it's relatively easy to solve.
Then why do we continue to see this teeth gnashing and looking for someone else to bail the sport out?
And it's kind of disturbing, isn't it? I think that, nobody wants to stick their neck out.
Okay.
The latest, everybody's afraid of getting canceled.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, you might get sued.
Is that?
Well, sue them back, okay? And then, no, but I think that, you know, there's an awful lot of people on a college football team that would probably like to remain a traditional student athlete, providing maybe they got a little more. Right now they get more than they ever had as a traditional student athlete, more grants, more you know, stipends.
Sure.
And everything else. But I mean, let's say I want to continue to be a traditional student athlete with and there's a number of reasons for that. One, they can't cut me for playing ability. Two, I can't get traded. Okay. Three, and I think we ought to do this because I think we ought to cultivate and encourage people getting their degree. If you get your degree and you play and you exhaust your eligibility at a university, give them $150,000. Okay. If you go on the transfer portal, you're not eligible for the $150,000. And then if you don't get your degree, you're not eligible for it. Okay. Well, professionals, what do professionals do? Everywhere from the NFL to minor league baseball, professionals get drafted, traded, and cut. I mean, I mean, do you know any professionals that don't?
No.
I mean, because I can't think of any except for college football, right? And then, so far we've been celebrating all the privileges of being a professional without the responsibility, which is exactly why we have unmitigated free agency, which the NFL, I mean, they'd pass out on the spot if you told them 24/7, 365 free agency. Well, they'd lose their mind. Okay, now tell them that not only is there no draft or trades, but you have to have a bidding war for everyone. Well, that's exactly where we're at. So what I would do is you can come in and you can sign in as a traditional student athlete or professional.
Okay.
professionally. Now, you're a really talented guy. I mean, look at you. You know, strong, run through a wall, that type of thing. Okay, so you would come in as a professional.
Okay.
So we put you on the list, make a list, everybody that's a professional. Have a sequence of draft order. Okay, here's our list of professionals. Schools would draft them. Boom, boom, boom. Now, if you don't play well, we'll cut you.
Okay.
And the other thing is, like, all of a sudden, like, I need a kicker. Shoot, we need a kicker. Wait. Who's a professional on here? This receiver's a professional. Okay, let's trade him over there on the West Coast and get us a kicker. So you trade. We got a kicker. They got a receiver. I mean, it's awesome. And people are somewhat shocked about this, but I mean, there's 17-year-olds getting traded all over the country,
sure,
and playing minor league baseball.
Of course.
And not only that, they stick them in a room with four people and on a bus. I say we don't do that. You know, I say we put them on the plane when traded, but that's what professionals do. There's nothing shocking. Revolutionary about it. What is revolutionary is the notion that we would find ourselves where we currently find ourselves without any consideration whatsoever for what exactly a professional is, and try to reinvent the wheel on our own when we already know how professionals do stuff.
One last thing, since you were most recently in the Pac-12 at a school that takes a long time to get to at Washington State, and now you see what's happening out there, and you don't see any blowback, any pushback. You just talk about, wow, that's a good brand move for the Big Ten, the money they're going to make. And I just wonder, because you were at one of those schools that are sitting there going, what's happening here, and where do we go from here?
Well, it's horribly tragic. I mean, it's completely tragic, and I hope the Pac-12 and they assemble some other teams stays together, because that would be what's best for college football. And then I do wonder, you know, because I think that it's going to be a little more difficult for USC and UCLA to keep everybody in Southern California five times a year. Taking 2 and 3 hour time zone trips. Now keep in mind, the rest of the Big Ten only has to do it less than once every other year.
Right.
And I've been on trips like this. And I know what the expression looks like, but they've got the after one. And I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but what do I care? And so trip number five. Okay, you played out there, either Penn State, Rutgers, or Maryland, say. Okay, you played out there. Okay, game started at 8 o'clock mm-hmm. at night. Okay, and you're going to come rolling in to Los Angeles at 8 in the morning,
yeah,
say.
Maybe.
And then the very next week, well, okay, fine. It's not Maryland, Penn State, but it's Michigan, or Iowa, or Purdue, you know. And then, I mean, look, it's going to be fun for me to watch. I'm not saying they won't do well. I mean, it might be such a good idea, everybody's going to do it, you know. And so we'll see. But, no, I mean, Washington State is a tremendous place, one of the greatest game day environments I've been to. And those teams in the Northwest, they need to have a great conference. They need to have the opportunity to play. And to be perfectly honest, some of this is suffering sins of the past, you know, because the Pac-12 was left vulnerable because there's a failure to have a TV deal. And so, so there was...
You must be saying something very controversial. We have two guys.
There was they want a break, but there was definitely some conference mismanagement at the top.
Right.
And that's very sad for the schools, the players, and the coaches.
Well, I feel I've always admired your honesty and your objectivity, and we wish you well. I know you've got a big season coming up, but we'll catch you on that when you break free of this maelstrom. Thank you, Coach. It's always good to see you.
All right. I appreciate you.
It's a pleasure. We'll be right back. Coach Mike Leach starting us off here at SEC Media Days, Day 2.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we're back, and Greg McElroy joining us momentarily here at our set. A lot of conversation already churning about what Coach Leach had to say. Let's tell you what else we're doing today. John Talty will join us shortly. Shane Beamer at the top of the next hour. Pete Thamel, Roman Harper, Tebow, Connor O'Gara, Chrissy Freud, Sapikoff, Mike Rodak, Michael Sauls, and Ashley Woods as we complete day two of SEC Media Days. Nick Saban just said something as we welcome in Greg McElroy, the quarterback at Alabama under Nick Saban. Breaking news, Alabama's one of the haves in college football.
That is accurate. Can confirm. Can confirm. Sources have indicated that they are, in fact, a have.
Wow. The things you learned.
Did you deny that?
I'm going to push back.
Coach, if you could expound upon what a have actually is.
At what moment did you first learn that Alabama was one of the haves?
I believe the first time I heard the word Alabama. It was in a football game against Miami in 1992. So I was four. Probably one of the first football games I ever watched. It got a little sideways that night.
It did.
That was night that I knew for a fact that Alabama was certainly a have.
I was just laughing at some of the things that Coach Leach said that I have a feeling.
I didn't hear any of it. What was he hot on?
It was NIL primarily expansion, but he had a couple of expressions that I know the audience heard, and I'm going to let them try to figure out what I'm laughing at because somebody had just sent me a text. It was just quite humorous. But that's the thing I like about him. I know you respect his offensive philosophy ability, but he doesn't care.
He does not care. He does not care. I remember one time we were doing a game. It was USC. No. It was USC at Washington State. And we were having to go all the way to Pullman. I'd never been there before. It's really a cool place, to be honest with you. You had to fly to Spokane. It took me like 27 hours to get there from Birmingham.
That was a short trip.
Yeah, long story short, we're doing our pregame conversation with Coach Leach. Most of the time, especially for the home coach, you are going to have a sit-down interview with the coach and the coaching staff on the day before the game. Well, with Coach Leach, he all wanted to do it on Tuesday. It's no big deal. It's not that unusual. Some guys like to have their routine, and he's certainly entitled to do it however he wants to do it. Well, while we were doing the actual phone call with Coach Leach, he's walking across campus, and he's, like, out of breath because – Pullman is extremely hilly, and there's people saying, "Hey, coach." He's like, "Hey, how are you? How are y'all?" Like in the middle of answers, he goes, "Yeah, my quarterback. Go Cougs. Yeah, quarterback's good. Receiver's good. Offense good. Things to work on defense. Hey, go Cougs. Yeah, like walking across. That's how he did his interview. Most guys are doing sit downs on Friday.
That
so
is funny.
He does not care. Now you're 100% right.
And you have to admire that because, in some ways, this is a robotic event.
It is. He is himself. Yeah. But what's funny is for those that I've been recruited by him, I've known him since I was 16 years old. He's the same guy back in 2004 so as he is when he in came 2022.
So you originally committed there, right?
I was committed to Texas Tech,
What was he like in the house?
What you just had? I mean, same guy. I remember on my visit, I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, man, this is going to be so cool. I'm going to learn about the air raid and, you know, what the intricacies of the air raid, and maybe he'll get me up on the board. Like, when you're on your visit, you're usually interacting with the coach or the coordinator, and you're up on the board, and you're drawing up plays, right, and they're explaining to you progressions. And it's just kind of cool because you get to learn a little bit of their base offense. And I was like, man, this is the air raid. And at that point, think about it, it's 2005. So Graham Harrell and Sonny Cumbie and B.J. Simmons and all these guys had just lit it up for the last 5 or 6 years. Cliff Kingsbury. And it was the offense that was taking off in college football. I played in a similar offense at South Lake Carroll where we just threw it all over the yard every single down. And I'm like, man, learning the air raid as a high school junior is like going to be the coolest thing ever. Well, we get into the meeting room, and he wanted to talk about how many rooms a house actually needed for it to be functional. And he determined that you really only needed one room. And for a house to technically be functional, all you really need is running water, which I guess, you know, in some ways, like that's, and we talked about that for a half hour.
It's important.
Yeah, it was very important, I guess. I'm not really sure how it applies to the air raid or the offensive philosophy that I thought I was going to learn, but it was definitely a unique experience to be around Coach Leach on a visit like that.
No, I'm always a big fan. I mean, he can be bewildering, and I think in some ways that gives him a little bit of a cushion. But you know, he also has the chops to back it up. I mean, you can't argue with his past.
Yeah, I mean, you know how hard it is to win in Lubbock, Texas? And not just win. Like, I mean, at one point having Texas Tech as the number two ranked team in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing at Washington State. I mean, they are a play or two. Or you want to look back at that season when they really made their run. They were a phantom non-targeting call away potentially from beating SC on the road. And they might have at that point been an 11-win team, and then they're knocking on the door of the playoff. And, right. I mean, we're talking about legit championship aspirations at both Texas Tech and at Washington State. Now, tell me in their history how many times that's happened at either one of those
Not
two
many.
Places.
Not many. Mike Price got them to two Rose Bowls.
To a Rose Bowl, yeah, with Ryan Leaf in 97. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, those opportunities are few and far between.
Yeah. Well, since Leach went so long, we're going to – scoot out of here, but I know you're going to, because you've been at this desk for about 6 hours today. So
well, the good news is I'm here again tomorrow, and I'm here again the day after that, so we can make up for lost time.
Well, we appreciate it. So before you go,
yes,
let me get to Nick Saban.
Okay.
And I mean, I've had a lot of opinions about his demeanor, but you told me earlier that you were with him privately, and he was fairly loose up there. He was predictable.
Yeah.
Not guarded, but because he doesn't have to be guarded.
He
can do this in his sleep, and sometimes it looks like he is.
Well, I would say this today. I thought he did a really good job of straddling the fence, and that's how I would kind of describe, because the biggest takeaways today, everyone's going to remember a few things. One, $3 million. People are going to remember that number. That's going to stick out to a lot of people, and that, for Nick Saban, is advantage Alabama.
Right.
But what people will also, if they read into the exact same answer, they can look at it from a different way and say, well, yes, well, Alabama benefited from these rules. He also described there, it's really a need for guardrails, and in an effort to create competitive balance, we need to figure out a way to curb the behavior of inducing players to go to a particular school because of NIL opportunities. And so you can look at it one of two ways. Like he said, this his number one point is, hey, we need to absolutely rein this thing in. That's his number one point. He's been saying it for months. It's out of control. Lane Kiffin said yesterday, it's basically legalized cheating, all this other stuff. Interpret it however you want. That's fine. But Nick Saban's goal of the offseason, at least he's been very outspoken about it, is there needs to be rules in place so that everybody has the same opportunity to be competitive. Obviously, that's not going to happen, but that's something that he aspires to in college football. But if we're not going to have that, just so you know, Alabama players last year collected $3 million, which is probably as much as anybody in the country. So he basically just took, said, look, it's just like the RPO conversation that we had six or seven years ago. Like, hey, I don't like where college football is going. Is this what we want college football to be? Do we want it to be tempo? Do we want it to be wide open? Do we want defense to be playing at such a disadvantage? But if you want it to be this way, guess what? We can play that game
exactly.
too. So that was how I think he handled today, is I thought he straddled the fence a lot, and I think that was beneficial to the program while also making sure that his main point was driven home, which is what he's been trying to drive home all offseason.
Yeah, and we probably won't hear him about this on this type subject until
next
something.
Year.
Yeah, but we'll hear your stories many, many more times this week. Greg, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate
it, buddy.
We're coming right back. We're live in Atlanta.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back. We're live at SEC Media Days. We've already had Greg on, and you heard from Coach Leach. Shane Beamer, that is, will join us in about 30 minutes. John Talty joining us, the senior sports editor at AL.com, with Nick Saban here today. I'm just thinking what your thoughts process is, because 2 weeks from now, or whenever it is, your leadership book on Nick Saban comes out.
3 weeks. We're almost there, Paul.
So, as you heard him talking, how many of those applications that you write about were you watching in real time?
I feel like there were a couple of them for sure. I think one of the things that we write about in the book, that I wrote about in the book, is how he handles the media. And I feel like what we saw today, you know, he doesn't really say anything without reason behind it. There's always a plan behind it. And so I feel like we saw him talking, you know, talking about leadership, talking about NIL, things that we know that he cares a lot about. You know, hitting on them in a very specific way to try to make a point here in beginning of talking season, right?
Yeah, and I think people were, once again, expecting more and disappointed like we were when we were in Destin. The Jimbo Fisher question never came up, but I frankly didn't expect it to come up, because there's almost a, and I want you to explain this, because I can't remember being a sports writer, but you are one. There's almost a code in this room that you don't really want to ask a question that Saban is going to swat away.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you think about the typical questions that get asked in here. They're usually a little softer, a little broader. You know, it's always interesting watching Nick Saban in a setting like this and how he handles questions compared to when it's back in Tuscaloosa and he's dealing with the local hacks, and he'll get a lot more fiery and go after him a bit more. So here there's not necessarily, you know, the reputation for very hard questions being asked in the main room. I don't feel like Saban was really pushed on anything today. It was, again, bigger, broader things. So I wasn't surprised that the Jimbo stuff didn't really pop up that much. And it's also the angle for people. I don't know if they realize what even should be asked about it.
Which almost brings me to the another question. It's kind of silly considering we're sitting up here on the SEC Network desk, but what is this thing really all about, this event called SEC Media Days?
I think it's for your show right now, right, Paul? I think, you know, what part of it is the people sitting behind us, you know, are kind of cameos. They're playing, you know, their background players. That's a lot of what it is. I mean, I think this has become such a television event in many ways. It's for the programming for the SEC Network and other places, more so than I think what it was initially intended to be. I mean, you were – not to age you here, Paul, but you were probably here for some of the original ones where, you know, you would ask your questions, you'd get, you know, stuff from every different SEC school, you'd store it up for a summer, you use it in your preview content.
Exactly.
All that's gone.
That's
now,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, but what John's talking about, and my first SEC Media Days was 1985. That doesn't age me. It makes me antediluvian. But the point being, there were small, there were not a lot of reporters here. And what we did, we had stories in the newspaper that week, but the big thing in July was you started stockpiling stories for the big preseason kickoff, which came about a week before the season in the Sunday paper, because that's how you sold advertising, and it was a massive thing. And now try finding one in your paper. But it was so crazy that in 1990, Steve Spurrier's first year at Florida, he played in the golf tournament for SEC Media Days. We were in Birmingham, and on Wednesday morning or Thursday morning, whatever it was, the media would be bussed out to Bentbrook Golf Course, and Spurrier played. And he got so many compliments for playing, because that sports writers are not a love group. No. And the head coach at Florida is playing with the boys. And he didn't need the PR, by the way, because he became one of the best coaches in SEC history. But that's really what it was about. And can you imagine today, Saban going, when do we head out to East Lake to go play around the golf?
Yeah, that's immediately where my head went with that story, was the incredible unlikelihood that Nick Saban would want to golf with almost anybody in this room right now.
And I'm going to save this for another time, maybe about a year from now, because there is I think the underbelly of the relationship you touch on in the leadership book, how he manages the media. But there's a lot more to that. Before you get out of here, I want to go back to yesterday with Greg Sankey. Another very nuanced speech, one that has a vetting process. What did we learn, and what does it mean in relation to the two biggest issues of the day, NIL and expansion?
Well, I think you've seen for more than a year now a pretty confident, borderline cocky version of Greg Sankey. I think we saw that again yesterday, talking about how, you know, we're already a super league. We, you know, already have kind of what we need. There's no pressure to expand. So I think you saw him coming from a very strong position. He clearly was taking some shots at the Big Ten, talking about how Texas and Oklahoma are better additions than USC and UCLA. And so I think we saw him trying to publicly position, again, the SEC as the strongest conference, that we don't have to do anything as of right now. We like what we have, and there's no rush for us to have to add anybody. But I think people will continue to watch the SEC and Big Ten closely to see, because they're the two superpowers, right? And if either one of them wants a program, they can probably get them, minus the legal stuff and all that. But big picture-wise, they can get who they want, whereas the Big 12, Pac-12, ACC, be hard for them to steal a really quality team right now.
I'm curious, because you know a lot of these commissioners, and you've written about them. But tomorrow, I believe it starts tomorrow in Charlotte. What is the commissioner of the ACC going to say? What can he say?
I think he has to we're trying to keep everybody together right now. I mean, I think they've fallen back on the grant of rights agreement multiple times, that this is keeping us together. We're trying to figure out the solutions that we can to figure out the best way to survive. And so is that looking at a partnership with Big 12 or Pac-12? I don't really know who they can add at this point. Notre Dame's the dream, right? But I don't think anybody thinks right now Notre Dame's dying to join the ACC. And so he's in a tough spot. And I think you're seeing a bunch of these younger, newer commissioners having to face problems very early on in their careers, you know, whether it's the Pac-12 commissioner or the ACC commissioner. They're both facing real challenges right now. And the Big 12 commissioner is now, too.
John Talty joining us here stateside here at the desk. John, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. John Talty's new book coming out 3 weeks from today. Is that right?
3 weeks.
It's a good book. I've read it. We will take a break. More to come, including Shane Beamer right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back. We're live at SEC Media Days. We've already had Greg on, and you heard from Coach Leach. Beamer, Shane Beamer, that is, will join us in about 30 minutes. John Talty joining us, the senior sports editor at AL.com, with Nick Saban here today. I'm just thinking what your thoughts process is, because 2 weeks from now, or whenever it is, your leadership book on Nick Saban comes out.
3 weeks. We're almost there, Paul.
So, as you heard him talking, how many of those applications that you write about were you watching in real time?
I feel like there were a couple of them for sure. I think one of the things that we write about in the book, that I wrote about in the book, is how he handles the media. And I feel like what we saw today, you know, he doesn't really say anything without reason behind it. There's always a plan behind it. And so I feel like we saw him talking, you know, talking about leadership, talking about NIL, things that we know that he cares a lot about, you know, hitting on them in a very specific way to try to make a point here in the beginning of talking season, right?
Yeah, and I think people were, once again, expecting more and disappointed like we were when we were in Destin. The Jimbo Fisher question never came up, but I frankly didn't expect it to come up because there's almost a, and I want you to explain this because I can't remember being a sports writer, but you are one. There's almost a code in this room that you don't really want to ask a question that Saban is going to swat away.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you think about the typical questions that get asked in here. They're usually a little softer, a little broader. You know, it's always interesting watching Nick Saban in a setting like this and how he handles questions compared to when it's back in Tuscaloosa and he's dealing with the local hacks, and he'll get a lot more fiery and go after him a bit more. So here there's not necessarily, you know, the reputation for very hard questions being asked in the main room. I don't feel like Saban was really pushed on anything today. It was, again, bigger, broader things. So I wasn't surprised that the Jimbo stuff didn't really pop up that much. And it's also the angle for people. I don't know if they realize what even should be asked about it.
Which almost brings me to the another question. It's kind of silly considering we're sitting up here on the SEC Network desk, but what is this thing really all about, this event called SEC Media Days?
I think it's for your show right now, right, Paul? I think, you know, what part of it is the people sitting behind us, you know, are kind of cameos. They're playing, yeah, you know, their background players. That's a lot of what it is. I think this has become such a television event in many ways. It's for the programming for the SEC Network and other places, more so than I think what it was initially intended to be. I mean, you were – not to age you here, Paul, but you were probably here for some of the original ones where, you know, you would ask your questions, you'd get, you know, stuff from every different SEC school, you'd store it up for a summer, you use it in your preview
yeah,
content.
Exactly.
All that's gone
that's
now.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, but what John's talking about, and my first SEC Media Days was 1985. That doesn't age me. It makes me antediluvian. But the point being, there were small. There were not a lot of reporters here, and every what we did, we had stories in the newspaper that week. But the big thing in July was you started stockpiling stories for the big preseason kickoff, which came about a week before the season in the Sunday paper, because that's how you sold advertising, and it was a massive thing. And now try finding one in your paper. But it was so crazy that in 1990, Steve Spurrier's first year at Florida, he played in the golf tournament for SEC Media Days. We were in Birmingham and on Wednesday morning or Thursday morning, whatever it was, the media would be bussed out to Bentbrook Golf Course. And Spurrier played, and he got so many compliments for playing because that sports writers are not a love group, yeah. and the head coach at Florida is playing with the boys, and he didn't need the PR, by the way, because he became one of the best coaches in SEC history. But that's really what it was about. And can you imagine today, Saban going, when do we head out to East Lake to go play around the golf?
Yeah, that's immediately where my head went with that story was the incredible unlikelihood that Nick Saban would want to golf with almost anybody in this room right now.
And I'm going to save this for another time, maybe about a year from now, because there is, I think, the underbelly of the relationship you touch on in the leadership book, how he manages the media. But there's a lot more to that. Before you get out of here, I want to go back to yesterday with Greg Sankey. Another very nuanced speech, one that has a vetting process. What did we learn, and what does it mean in relation to the two biggest issues of the day, NIL and expansion?
Well, I think you've seen for more than a year now a pretty confident, borderline cocky version of Greg Sankey. I think we saw that again yesterday, talking about how, you know, we're already a super league. we, you know, already have kind of what we need. There's no pressure to expand. So I think you saw him coming from a very strong position. He clearly was taking some shots at the Big Ten, talking about how Texas and Oklahoma are better additions than USC and UCLA. And so I think we saw him trying to publicly position, again, the SEC as the strongest conference, that we don't have to do anything. As of right now, we like what we have, and there's no rush for us to have to add anybody. But I think people will continue to watch the SEC and Big Ten closely to see, because they're the two superpowers, right? And if either one of them wants a program, they can probably get them, minus the legal stuff and all that. But big picture-wise, they can get who they want, whereas the Big 12, Pac-12, ACC, be hard for them to steal a really quality team right now.
I'm curious because you know a lot of these commissioners and you've written about them. But tomorrow, I believe it starts tomorrow in Charlotte. What is the commissioner of the ACC going to say? What can he say?
I think he has to just, we're trying to keep everybody together right now. I mean, I think they've fallen back on the grant of rights agreement multiple times, that this is keeping us together. We're trying to figure out the solutions that we can to figure out the best way to survive. And so is that looking at a partnership with Big 12 or Pac-12? I don't really know who they can add at this point. Notre Dame's the dream, right? But I don't think anybody thinks right now Notre Dame's dying to join the ACC. And so he's in a tough spot. And I think you're seeing a bunch of these younger, newer commissioners having to face problems very early on in their careers, you know, whether it's the Pac-12 commissioner or the ACC commissioner. They're both facing real challenges right now. And the Big 12 commissioner is now, too.
John Talty joining us here stateside here at the desk. John, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. John Talty, his new book coming out 3 weeks from today. Is that right?
3 weeks.
It's a good book. I've read it. We will take a break. More to come, including Shane Beamer right around the corner.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.